Thorpe is coming in. Gold and a world record. Ian Thorpe, the birth of a legend.
458 is the total, out of which Bradman has made 309 not out. It's a world's record.
Bradman has two gone. The crowd roaring. Bradman wins gold. Cathy's the winner. Australia the winner.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
Welcome to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Sam Edmund.
Hello everybody and welcome to the show. As always, we're here for our great friends at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Well, today we're joined by a legendary Australian journalist, a former sports editor and a man who revolutionised how Australian football is covered. Scott Palmer was the central figure in some of the biggest stories in footy history. He didn't play, coach or umpire, but the man who has newspaper ink running through his veins has a passion for the game and a good yarn. Scotty, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here with you.
It was your famous sign-off, Scotty, but I don't feel like we can get started until we get a trademark keep on punching. Can you indulge us?
Sure we can. Keep on punching.
Where did the catch cry come from, Scotty?
Jack Cannon. I don't know if you remember Jack Cannon, but he was a famous journalist for the Herald, and he became the editor of the Sunday Press, and he started his column up with cannon shots, and he said, "You need a slogan that gets them fired up." He said, "Keep on punching. Why don't you do that? You love your boxing," and that's how it started.
You're clearly still punching. How's the health these days, Scotty?
Well, I've been through a few traumas. I had cancer in the prostate, and I had that out. And I had cancer in the throat, and I've had that attended to with 35 radiotherapies and chemotherapies. And I've had both hips taken out. I've had a knee taken out. I've had cataracts off my eyes. I've been through the wars a bit, but I'm still here. That's the point. Sometimes wonder when I'm laying in bed in the morning how I wake up. It's amazing, really. Life's funny.
Now, Scotty, you were born March 25th, 1937 in Richmond. In fact, you were born and bred in Richmond. It would have been a tough suburb in those days, wouldn't it?
It was a really tough suburb, yeah. I was born, bred, educated. I married the girl that lived opposite me in Richmond, in Lennox Street, Richmond. And we're still married after 61 years now.
Fantastic. And we'll get to Lorraine a little bit later, your dear wife.
Yeah,
but your old man, Scotty, was the legendary Clyde Palmer, a sports and a crime reporter. Fair combination, that. But he was a journo of great repute.
Came from a journo family. The three brothers were all good operators. One was Lindsay, was the sports editor for the Sydney Telegraph, and Howard was a place in the Sun. He was a columnist for the Sun, and Dad, of course, was the eldest, and he sort of set the path for these guys. But he started with the Morning Post, and then went to the Sun, and then ended up on Truth. And I was just thinking, overnight, you know, I had a look at some of the photos from the past, and there I was at school. I was a schoolboy, and I was actually started with the Truth when I was at school, and I became their film critic, working on a Saturday and also doing the films through the week. I had a pass from Hoyts and a pass from independent theatres, and the first picture I commented on was the Harlem Globetrotters. They brought out a picture and I did something on that. And that was the very first. I did it for a couple of years.
Is it true that you sat upright if the film was good, Scott, and you snored if it was a dud?
That's right. That's exactly right. Jesus, you've been looking into the past a bit. That's exactly right. I had a little dinkus, that if I had a good picture,
I love it.
Stood up and shouted out, yeah.
With Clyde, your dad's line of work, being especially when he was the crime reporter, did you ever have some colourful characters who popped over to the Palmer household?
I sure did. I sure did. There were a lot of well-known people, colourful characters, that knocked on the door. We never owned a house. I lived in a flat all my life. We never owned a car. We never went on a holiday because my old man lived in taxis, loved work, and never wanted to go away. And he just had so many contacts here that he had to keep in touch with them all the time. An amazing guy he was. He really was. But I missed out on a bit, I suppose, if you think that. You know, I never had a house of my own, always a flat. Amazing.
What you did have, though, Scott, was a real love of footy growing up. And you were a Tigers man living in the heart of Tiger Town. What was that like?
It was fantastic, really. I only lived 100 metres or so from the Richmond ground, Punt Road ground. But I was never a Richmond barracker. My grandfather was an old Carlton United Brewery horse driver, and he carried the barrels around. And he used to drive me back from school down to the Collingwood football ground, because that's where he used to park the thing and put the horses away. And he used to take me into the Collingwood rooms, and I used to meet up with Lou Richards and Fonce Kine, Gordon Hocking, a lot of those guys. Georgie Hams, who was a favourite of mine. Bobby Rose was there too. Yeah, but that's how I loved Collingwood, and I was still fond of them.
And you would go on to enjoy, well, a long and distinguished career as a reporter and an editor at The Sun, Sunday Press, Sunday Sun, Sunday Herald Sun. But you mentioned being the film critic there, Scotty, but when did you get your first break in the media? Was it that, or was it something that came a little bit earlier?
That was probably set me on the way. I always loved newspapers. I used to write little newspapers at home and all that sort of stuff just to send around the people at the flats, see what was doing. And it was in my blood. But my break came, of course, when I got the job as a copy boy at The Sun. I had a flair for sort of unusual stories. And this bloke at the in the features saw me, and he made me the Young Sun editor. And I got out and did stories like A Day, a Sheep Shearer, and A Day is Something Else, and A Day is Something Else, just to give the kids an idea of what jobs are around. And that's how I got a start off, I reckon.
And I'm sure when you were critiquing films there, Scott, you never thought you'd actually play yourself in a feature film, but you did exactly that, and you did it in the classic Aussie flick, The Club.
Yeah, that was terrific too. I enjoyed doing that with Jack Thompson. An unusual thing. We did it at the Collingwood ground, and Graham Kennedy was in a leading role there, and he had played my old man in The Power Without Glory, and we became fairly good mates. He used to say to me, just be yourself. Don't worry about anything. Just be yourself. And it was good fun. It was really good fun.
Hollywood never called?
No. In fact, funny thing, Sam, I've got photograph, and it's all the checks that I got from the club, rights and all that sort of stuff.
The royalty
checks?
They
amount to about 20. Yeah, royalty checks. And they amount to about $20. Yeah, but I've still got them framed.
Fantastic. And speaking of getting things framed, I don't know if you did this, but do you remember your first back page?
They put me onto VFA, which I loved. Yep. And I got some great stories out of VFA, unusual stories. And I became a good mate of a lot of the players down there. And one was Johnny Coghlan, who played for Oakley. And he used to feed me some good stories, like ring me up and he said, listen, I've had a death threat and all this sort of stuff. I used to get the back pages for VFA, which was unheard of. Sandringham turned their grandstand into a soup kitchen at one stage. Hmm. They were going that bad. Blokes used to sail out from Williamstown to check the winds before a match. And we used to get photographs of them out there in a rowboat. checking the winds and all. And they were terrific stories. Easy stories to get, and yet good stories because they're unusual. That's why. There was one terrific story made not only the front page, it did make the front page, was when Tommy Laiff, the Port Melbourne coach, was locked up and handcuffed for abusing an opposition player. And the police took him off the ground and put him in handcuffs, and made a big splash.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Next, Scott Palmer on the move from the VFA to the big time of the VFL.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, great to have your company on This Is Your Sporting Life, made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Well, we're with journalism icon Scott Palmer. Scott, when you did step up to cover the VFL, was that like getting a game in the seniors at that point, or had you broken that many stories, it was a pretty seamless transition?
A big time when I moved up to the VFL. You know, I was with Kevin Hogan and Rex Pullen and Jack Dunn, and it was wonderful, really. I thought, how good is this? And just going out to training on a Tuesdays and Thursday nights, we covered all grounds, was just wonderful. Meeting guys that you'd never dream of meeting, you know, Teddy Whitten at Footscray and Bobby Skilton, who I spoke to the other day. He's having a bit of problem with his shoulder. And but seeing Bobby down at the Lake Oval, and that was just fantastic, really. And at Geelong, even Geelong, when I used to go down to, Geelong was a bad one because you had to go down in a car and back again. But I loved going down to Geelong. Bobby Davis was down there, and there were a few guys that used to hang around the ground and used to tell me all the little bits and pieces that went on. Oh, they were my leaks down there. It was good fun.
We spoke about the VFA. When it came to the VFL, what are some, so many stories I know, but what are some of the ones that live on with you now?
Tommy Hapey was always a good mate of mine. He had the milk bar in Richmond. I used to go there and hang around the jukebox and all that sort of stuff. And in fact, my wife worked for him for a while. I was down at the Rising Sun Hotel in South Melbourne. On a Friday night, it was very busy down there. It was a good time to get down there. A lot of football people went there. And I was told on the Friday night, as I was going out the door, a bloke, I won't mention his name, he's still attached to Richmond a little bit. He was a very prominent figure down there. And he called me aside and he said, "Scott, I'm just telling you, Sunday morning at a certain bloke's place, they're going to sack Tommy Hafey." And I said, "What?" He said, "Yep, they're going to sack him. He'll be under the oak tree. They're going to meet and have a couple of beers. And I've been told they're going to sack Tommy Hafey as coach after four premierships." And anyway, I went there. Well, I couldn't get it out of my mind. So I drove down to Richmond, and I spoke to Graham Richmond, who was the absolute power broker. He was the man who did everything. And I walked in, and it was after 10 o'clock, and he was mopping out Vaucluse Hotel. I said to him, "Listen, I've just been told that Tommy's going to get the sack." And he said, "Scott, because you're a Richmond boy and born and bred, and I've known you since you were a kid, will not deny, but I will not confirm." I said, "Oh, God almighty, where does this put me?" So I went home, I waited, I rang Hafey, and he was at the Sandringham Drive-In and with Maureen. And he hadn't been home yet, so I waited and waited and waited. I rang later, and I said, "Tom, I've just been told that you're going to get the sack on Sunday." He said, "Oh, those stories have been going around for years." He said, "No, no truth in it. No way known at all." Into the office, And I spoke to the sports editor, Alan Dunn, and he said, well, write something and we'll put it in that it could happen. So I did. And you wouldn't believe it. Sunday morning, he got the flick. He didn't talk to me for about 2 or 3 years after that. And we were good mates too. But just shows you never know where you pick up a story.
He held it against you for a few years, you say?
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, did he? What? Oh yeah. In fact, he never really liked press people. Didn't like the media much. But I always, we were good mates. I used to be in his shop all the time. Oh, he was a terrific guy, Tommy Hafey.
And Scott, just on that mateship with Tommy Hafey, a legend of the game, a premiership coach, when it comes to relationship with players and coaches back in those days, I mean, how different was it? I mean, when you look at the modern game now and you're in the game for a long, long time, was it easier to form relationships back then and was it better in that sense?
Oh, yeah. It was easier. It was better. And I say to people I met at that period, I'm still friends with now. I saw Michael Tuck. I've got a picture here at home of me interviewing Michael Tuck after one of his premierships, and I'm sitting next to him in the dressing room. And, you know, there was those sorts of things you could do in those days. It was fantastic, really. I've got great rapport with a lot of people from Peter Hudson lives down this way. Ian Wilson. And I meet up with Ian Wilson at the local footy club down here. Tony Jewell is a good man. My wife made him a couple of masks to wear for work the other day. All those things. The relationships were so strong. Teddy Whitten was, and Barass, of course. I became Barass's ghostwriter for about 15 years and went through hell with him because he used to make sure that every word was correct, every full stop was there, and it was painful, but it was fantastic, really, too. And he is probably my idol. Barass. I just love him.
And was there more trust back then, Scott? Was there some frustration on your behalf, perhaps later in your years in the industry, that the trust just wasn't there like it maybe it was, you know, decades earlier?
Oh, the trust was there, I think. I never had any problems with anybody, really. I got on well with people. Carl Dittrich, I saw a picture of Carl Dittrich looking at a picture of him getting his number 4 Guernsey from Daryl Baldock. And I did that story back in 1959. Carl used to be pretty violent at times. He used to run past me and give me a bump and all that sort of stuff. But we still became good mates.
Was there a story you had, Scott, there might have been several, that you chose not to publish?
I can't think of any. Mm-hmm. I usually wrote them.
fair enough too.
Somehow I found a way to put them in.
Amidst the writing, that you had stints on breakfast radio, there was various footy paddles along the way too, but tell me, was it the move into TV, and I want to know how that came about, because it was as the pioneering presenter of Punchlines on Channel 7 that your legend truly grew, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. Breakfast radio, I was on with Johnny Blackman, who I still connect up with now, even though he's had problems of his own, and Sean Cosgrove and Leon Weigard. I was on with Bertie Newton at 3DB for a while too. But I always try and sort of stay close to people I know and people I trust. And one was Gordon Bennett. And now he was a young cameraman, about 17 or 18 when I first met him. And he became sort of the producer of World of Sport and a terrific character down at Channel 7. In fact, he a legend at Channel 7. And he used to come up, have a drink with me at Lou Richards. And I used to go down there on a Friday night and have a few drinks with him. And I said, Gordon, you don't get enough news down here. He said, well, what do you think I should do? I said, well, I could bring down some stories and you could get someone to put them over. So he said, why don't you come down for World of Sport and bring down some questions? You can give hand out to Jack Dyer and those guys. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I did that for a couple of years. And then, listen, I might come up one night up to the Sunday Press and we might do a bit of a film and see how you do it off the desk. I said, okay. So he did it and it worked. And 25 years later, I think I was still doing it.
Punchlines was born. Were you a one-take wonder, Scott, or did you need a few cracks at it?
No. Hey, I'll tell you a story. Down at Channel 7, the operators down there, they regarded me as something unusual. They termed my little segment Scotty Lotto. They gambled on how many takes I did to get it right. And 22 was the most I'd done. 22 takes I did one night to get it right.
What made it the success that it was?
The punchlines. It was different because no one, and it was rough, a jacket on and didn't even comb my hair. And it was just natural. That's what it was. And a lot of people didn't mind me making the odd error when I first started. I think they were counting how many I made. I know that the Age, because we were in opposition to the Sunday Age, were very unhappy about me having the platform of Channel 7 to push the Sunday Press. And they used to write to Channel 7 and ask them whether they could have somebody on as well. They felt that we were getting a leg up, which we were, of course. But Channel 7 stuck with me, and they didn't change it one thing. They said, you just go on the way you've been going. You're doing all right. So that's how it started, and that's how it finished.
Scotty, the game today and the coverage of it, I mean, do you sit back and marvel at just how big it has become?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It really is. There's more opinion writers now. Blokes have got egos. A lot of them have got so many egos. It's unbelievable. Well, I was just a sort of a backroom boy, you know, and that's how it started for me. But now they want to be up there doing this, doing that, and break. Everything has to be exclusive. Just tell the story. That's all you have to do. Tell the story. There's so many wonderful stories around that aren't even covered. It's amazing. It really is.
It's all about branding now, you reckon, Scott?
It is. It is. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it gets on my goat the way they say, this is exclusive. We've got it first and all this sort of stuff. Who cares whether you got it first or not? Tell it promptly. And give them something that they haven't heard before. That's the key. And make it interesting. There's a bit of entertainment involved in it. That's why that Front Bar is such a good show. It tells it differently. Mar and all those guys do a good job on that. I might be getting old, which I am. I'm 83 now.
You're with This Is Your Sporting Life, brought to you, of course, by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Well, it wasn't just footy for Scott Palmer. After this break, we'll talk Olympics, Cassius Clay, and Nelson Mandela.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, we hope you're enjoying this week's edition of This Is Your Sporting Life. We're chatting with a man who keeps on punching, Scott Palmer. Well, Scotty, you were fortunate enough to take your craft overseas with the Rupert Murdoch Scholarship, and it gave you the chance to work in London. That must have been a huge thrill.
Fantastic. That was unusual for me. You know me, you know what I look like. I'm not exactly a charismatic character. In the Herald at that time, there were some big, tall, good-looking cadets that I thought were superior to me. But I was chosen for the Murdoch scholarship, which was unbelievable, really. Anyway, it took me to London and New York, and I was particularly keen when I went to America in New York, and I stayed with a bloke that was over there, our correspondent, Donnie Peterson, and he sort of guided me in the right directions. And I became very... One story, if you don't mind, one story that was interesting was I became interested in trotting over there. Yonkers Speedway, it was. And there was a bloke over there called Irving Rudd who ran trotting. I had a good time. And he looked after me. A year later, he rang me back and he said, "Listen, Scott, I've got four journos from New York, good sports journos, wanting to come to Australia. Now, if we come to Melbourne, could you show them around for a day?" So I said, "Yeah, I'll look after them for a day." They arrived and I got the Herald to loan me a big limo car. I went out to pick them up at the airport. First off, to the MCG. And I showed them around the MCG, and Ian Johnson was there then, and we had morning tea and all that sort of stuff set up. Then we went to Flemington and to see where the Melbourne Cup was held, and to the showgrounds where the trotting was on. We had the full day. I took them to Farlap at the museum, Sandown Park. They had to get back to the airport to get this late plane to Sydney, back to Sydney. And I said, "I've got a star attraction." And I took them out to Marco Polo Street, Mooney Ponds. And Lionel Rose was the world champion bantamweight boxer then. He'd beaten Fighting Arada. Called into Jack Rennie's house. And we all sat down in the lounge room with his wife. Had a cup of tea again, went out to this little shed in the backyard where Lionel Rose, the world champion, was training. And these guys from America were just amazed. And it was just a wonderful experience for these guys. You couldn't believe how much they were pleased, so pleased to be there, you know.
And speaking of boxing, isn't that where you cross paths with a certain Cassius Clay?
Jack Cannon was... there, and he said, "Why don't you go out and see Cassius Clay train?" So I said, "Oh, I will." So I caught a train out to Chalk Farm where the gym was, and it was packed. There was cameras everywhere, and he was boxing with Jimmy Ellis, who went on to win a world title. He was Cassius Clay's sparring partner. We all went into the dressing room, and Angelo Dundee was there, his trainer and all, pushing in, trying to get a good spot. They couldn't work out how to weigh Cassius. He was sitting there with just a robe on and a towel around him, and they were trying to work out how to work this machine. And it was one of those sliding weights that you had to push it across a bar till it levelled up. And they couldn't work it. So I said, "I think I can do that." And I actually weighed him while he was standing there. And he was sweating like a pig. Oh, you know, he was fantastic. You couldn't wish to see a better figure of a man than Cassius Clay. He was just wonderful. And I start to talk to him. And then he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Oh, from Australia." And he said, "Oh, I'd love to go to Australia." He said, "There's a lot of Aboriginals out there, aren't they?" I said, "Yeah." And we start to talk about the outback. Got into a good conversation about Australia and the Aboriginals and how they live and all that sort of stuff. And then it's a funny thing, Sam. At that night, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, I was walking through Piccadilly in London, having a look at the sights and all that sort of stuff. And a taxi pulled up. It was Cassius Clay. And he wound down the window and he said, "Hey, Scott, do you want a lift anywhere?" How stupid was I? I said, "No, Cassius, good. Yeah, no, I'm okay. No problems, mate." I should have got in the cab. I still kick myself.
Have you got a favourite Olympic moment that stands out, that endures, Scotty?
Yeah. Oh, a favourite Olympic moment. I got Mandela, yes. Barcelona, And Steve, remember Stephen Phillips?
Yeah, of course.
Well, he was the chief of staff for Channel 7 at that stage for the Olympics. And he said, hey, Scott, there's word that Nelson Mandela was going to visit the athlete's village. Why don't you go down and see if you can find him? See if you can see him. Take a cameraman. So we went down. We went through all the red tape to get into the village. We walked around for a while and couldn't find anything. And I went up to this gatekeeper and I said, listen, have you seen Nelson Mandela walk around here at all? He said, yeah, he just went up those stairs there. I said, oh, hello. Come on, up we go. So I went up the stairs and it was a long aisle with all rooms from out of both sides. And we went, tested every room. Finally, we went into one and there he was. He was talking to some South African officials. I said, now, just wait. And as soon as he breaks off this conversation, we're going to go straight up there and introduce ourselves. So that happened. We walked straight up and I said, I'm Scott Palmer from the Australian media. And he said, oh, Australia, yeah. And I said, what are you here for, Mr. Mandela? He said, oh, well, we're back in the Olympics, South Africa, and I wanted to see how the boys were settling in and all that sort of stuff. And we got into a bit of a conversation on that. When do you think you could come to Australia? And he said, I'd love to. He said, but there's a lot to do at home before I get around to travelling overseas. We took photos and all, and I went back to 7, and we'd missed the news. And I said, I've got Mandela. And Stephen said, oh, geez, we've just missed the news. We might have to wait a bit. But just then, NBC, the American Broadcasting Service, came in and said, we believe you got some film of Nelson Mandela. And they said, yes. They said, do you think we could borrow it? So they Channel 7 said, sure. So they took the film and they said, Scott, why don't you go down and see what they do with it? So I went down to the NBC office and then sat down and watched myself on American TV.
And what a great pleasure it is to talk to him too on This Is Your Sporting Life. All thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. We'll be back shortly to get Scott's recollections of his foray into the pub game.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives.
It's been great to have your company here on This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals. MCG Media Hall of Famer Scott Palmer is our guest today. Well, Scott, apart from media and apart from being a father and a husband, you also find a sliver of time to go into business, and you did so. You became a publican.
There was a little pub in Richmond, the Cherry Tree, in the back blocks. No one knew where it was. But I used to pass it, and I always used to think, if I had a pub, that's the one I'd like to own. Well, many, many years later, Ron Barassi and Adrian Gallagher and I put in a few thousand bucks each, and we got a lease of the Cherry Tree Hotel, which was so run down you couldn't imagine. It was controlled by a drug dealer. Just an ordinary, very, very ordinary place. In fact, the normal person wouldn't want to go into it. That's how bad it was. Well, I saw something in it. I'd always loved it. And I can remember going down there one night and with Gags Gallagher. We were having a look through it. And the types down there weren't too good, you know. The people that owned it at that stage really were pleased that we took it over. We had a wonderful time down there, except that we had this drug dealer who was massive in the business. Oh, he ran the place, ran the drugs. He thought he was in charge. And he used to come in, he'd get a small, tiny glass, bourbon and coke, and put down $50 and leave the money there, leave the change there. And I used to say to the barmaid, just pick the money up, put it aside. Next time he came in, give it back to him. So we virtually weaned him off, and we got rid of all the druggies that were waiting around for him to make the deliveries and all that sort of stuff. It was a very hazardous time. He used to shoot the place up every time we did something against him. Part of our masonry, the walls outside, were blown away. It was like the old Wild West. Normal person would be afraid to walk in. But we kept at it and kept at it. Do you remember a bloke called Terry Holden? He used to be a crooner for IMT. And he was a terrific bloke. And he fell on bad times and rang me up one day and he said, I'm a short order cook now up at Ernie Sigley's Hotel, the Australia in Bridge Road. But he's given me the flick. Have you got a room down at the Cherry Tree that I could rent? And I had a few guys staying down there. And I said, yeah, I think I have. I think I've got the honeymoon suite. He said, what's the honeymoon suite? I said, well, it's the only bedroom with hot and cold running water in it. Anyway, he said, oh, do you reckon I could get it? And I said, yeah. He said, what are you going to charge me? I said, oh, make it $20 a week. He came down. And one night he was standing in the bar with me, having a beer. Drug dealer came in. And Terry must have looked at him badly or something because he said, what are you looking at? And Terry said, not much. And anyway, he pulled a pistol. He held it on us. And he said, I'm going to shoot your balls off. Testicles, he said. And he was waving this gun around. He held it on us, and he was, one more word of you from you, Terry, and you won't have any testicles. We're there for about an hour or more with this gun on us, and he was going to kill us. My son, who lived at the pub, and he saw what was happening, and he went upstairs, and he got his shotgun. He came down, and he stood on the other side of the bar and pointed his shotgun straight at this guy. And he said, if you touch that trigger, I'll blow you to kingdom come. The bloke got a bit scared, dashed out. We were bloody thankful because that was a very dicey situation. The coppers got him, but we had to go to the Paran court. The magistrate said to me, Mr. Palmer, when this bloke walked in, how was he behaving? I said, well, he walked in like Jimmy Cagney, the actor, with his swaggering this way and swaggering that way. And you wouldn't believe there was a bloke from Truth there at the court case. The Truth came out next that week and said, headlines, you know, he walked in like James Cagney, said Palmer. I was made the papers that way as well. But, yeah, they were amazing days.
That's a long way from the VFA.
It was a long way from it sure was. Yeah, it was a wonderful part of the world. It should have been. But we cleaned it all out and were able. When we went into the pub, they were selling one barrel of beer a week. An 18 it was, one barrel. They weren't interested in beer. They were interested in drugs, everybody, you know. But we cleaned all that out. And in the end, we were selling 30 barrels of beer a week. It became a very, very successful little pub. Brass never appeared that much. He used to come down and check the books and all that sort of stuff. But there was one time there, he came in and he and I were at the end of the bar having a drink and the Paran crime cars raided the pub looking for drugs. And this had happened regularly, of course. And the place was packed. Anyway, the police came in and pushed their way through the crowd and anyone who got their ray, they gave a little jab to, pushed their way out. And Brass said, well, this is police brutality. I'm watching here. And he said, I said, oh, this happens regularly. You know, these blokes are used to this. And anyway, this big sergeant came up to us, and Barras said, listen, I reckon you've been a bit heavy-handed here. These blokes weren't doing anything wrong. And the sergeant said, listen, Barassi, one more word from you and you'll be the first in the divvy wagon. Well, I thought Barras was my hero, you know. He could do anything, go through brick walls. But he went backwards so fast he nearly knocked me over. He was a bit scared himself. But he didn't come back after that. He didn't make too many trips back to the pub after that episode. They were funny days.
I just wanted to ask you, Scotty, what you thought about the way the game is played today, because I think you've got a real love for the game still, but maybe more on the local footy front. You're a passionate local footy man, aren't you? But what do you make of the modern game?
I like football. I love football. It's different. I did like the high marking. I did like, you know, the ruck rover combination going well. I liked seeing Paul van der Haar at centre-half forward, high marking with Peter Knights and all that sort of stuff. Now it's very athletic and very... It's a brutal game now. I tell you what, you have a look at what's taking place now. They hit each other hard, I tell you. Yeah, but it's hasn't got the flair. I used to like the high marks and just the man-on-man too, one-on-one. And none of this kicking backwards, kicking sideways, kicking forward. That's the way you want to go, kick forward. Anyway, but it's still a great game and it still captivates audiences, and that's the way football should be. I love the local footy. I get down there. I used to host the lunches down here for about 4 years and used to enjoy it until I got sick. But I was still going back, and one of the first MCs that actually sang songs too. But I can't sing anymore, as you can tell by my voice.
Scotty, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. You were an inspiration to many. You're a pioneer in so many ways when it comes to how the game is consumed by the fans. And you've been incredibly entertaining today as much as ever. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good on you, mate.
And thank you for joining us also. You've been listening to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We'll catch you next week to celebrate the life of another sporting icon.